Small businesses. Direct Line guarantee to be any public liability insurance quote for the same cover. Can your insurance do that? New customers only. Qualifying criteria apply. Underwritten by UK Insurance Limited.
Yeah, that's the big dog. Hi, Chuck. Back in the house with my man. And there he is, Steve Callis, joining us right now. Hello, my friend. How are you doing this week?
Great to be with you, Joe. Looking forward to it, as always.
Hey, it was a really unusual week, and to say that about the NFL is certainly saying something. We had the Richard Sherman incident and the Twitter war with a kicker's wife, and we have a lot of weird stuff going on this week, you know, in the National Football League. Eli Manning throws four touchdown passes and still almost loses the game. The Eagles have lost their mind as Doug Peterson lost his mind. A lot of stuff going on. Of course, we'll get to the World Series recap as well. I know Chicago's still having a good old time with their first championship in 105 years, the Cubbies. And we'll also look ahead to this week. We got some big ones, Cowboys in Pittsburgh, and, of course, the Falcons and Matt Ryan from local kid, making a play for an MVP type season. Will be playing in his backyard, playing the Eagles, trying to rebound. Just your thoughts in general, Steve, and what stood out to you most last week, week 9 of the National Football League?
Well, what stood out to me the most, frankly, was the how far the Packers have fallen to lose to the Colts at Lambeau. I was shocked. I was 2-1 last week.
Bad loss.
That was my loser. And they just don't seem to have that offense. The players are back. Jordy Nelson is there. Everybody had high hopes at the beginning of the year. But I think I, at least for me personally, have to write them off for a while until they can right the ship. And the other team, well, two teams that have fallen off a cliff, the Vikings have fallen off a cliff. I think you liked the Lions last week, if I remember correctly. I hope I remember correctly.
I did.
To lose, again, in Minnesota. And maybe you're right that Sam Bradford is becoming Sam Bradford, but he really doesn't have the protection he seemed to have the first 3 weeks. And switching to the other team, the Eagles, you know, after their incredible beginning, they're now in last place, 4-4 in the NFC East. I didn't view that as a particularly great game for anybody. The Giants won, and I'm a Giants guy, as you know, but I don't know what Doug Peterson is thinking. You could not run the ball on the Giants. They spent a lot of their money shoring up that front seven, and the Eagles couldn't run yet on three different occasions on fourth down. Peterson wanted to go for it, and all three, you'll recall, were like runs to the side, two by the quarterback. I don't know that Wentz is so mobile that he's going to run around either end on fourth and two or fourth and one to get a first down. And the other one, even to Sproles, who is an excellent squirmy, I can get you a yard any time back. They were kind of 0-for-3 on that. And the final thing I'll say about that game and turn it over to you is before the half, the whole thing with Wentz going back, rookie quarterback, I understand, but to take a sack on the final play of the half, I think maybe these guys are afraid to throw interceptions, Joe, because all he had to do on both of those plays, they were literally just throw it down the field. If you can connect on one, you can either take one shot at the end zone or kick a field goal. And he just didn't do it. And taking a sack on the final play of a half or a game is the dumbest thing I've ever seen. Just literally throw it up in the air and hope your guys can make a play. So I thought it was a bizarre game from the Eagles' side. Again, a good win for the Giants, but I don't think they played particularly well. And, oh, by the way, they've lost Victor Cruz as well now.
Yes, I'm aware. Listen, in the National Football League, you're not going to win too many games when you throw two picks in the first 5 minutes and you are down 14-0 in the first six minutes of the game. Wentz settled down a little bit after that, but he's throwing the ball 47 times. You're right, they couldn't run the ball. I didn't even have a – Doug Peterson got killed in this town – the majority because of the aggressiveness of not taking the 3 points on two occasions where they were down and they needed to chip away. I didn't really have a problem with that. I had a problem with, like you said, Steve, the play calls on those fourth downs. And when they did try to kick, they had one block and it almost got run back for a touchdown. Special teams was not good. They didn't punch it in enough in the red zone when they got down there. And I thought Carson Wentz, to be honest with you, 27 to 40, 364 yards. I thought he stunk, to be honest with you. And he's a rookie, so I'm not going to win that game. He had Dorial Green Beckham on a skinny post on the second to last possession, I believe. He overthrew him. He was sailing balls all day. And the very last play that they had offensively, fourth and 10, he was getting a lot of pressure. Steve Spagnuolo kept sending him the house, and it was working. So he made the right read. He threw a fade, but he threw it outside to Jordan Matthews when it was an inside. He didn't give him a chance to catch the ball. I just thought that Wentz had a really bad day. It was, and I'm so tired of people saying they should be 7-1 because of the Dallas game, because of the Detroit game, because of the Giants game. No, they shouldn't. Good teams should be 7-1 because they had opportunities, and we're cashing on their opportunities. But bad teams or average teams do what the Eagles do and did, and they weren't able to finish the three games that I just mentioned, and they're 4-4. And you know what? You are what your record says you are. And they are 4-4. They started off hot. They're now 1-4 since the 3-0 start. They deserve to be 4-4. And, yeah, sure, the Giants didn't play all that great, but they had more weapons. They made more plays than the Eagles did. And, you know, that's where things ended up. So, unfortunately, if you're an Eagle fan, you're 500 and now looking, you know, it's going to be tough to make the playoffs at this point. It doesn't get any easier with the Falcons coming to town. Your thoughts on Matt Ryan and the Falcons and their situation, because they're certainly they look like a tough team to at least keep up with. 43 points against the Buccaneers last week on the road. The game's actually a pick 'em here in Philadelphia Sunday. Your thoughts on that, Steve?
Yeah, I don't know. It's almost to me like a trap game that says pick the Falcons because
you know
they're undefeated on the road. I told you I saw them personally out in Oakland when they lost to when the Falcons beat the Raiders in Oakland. So it's fascinating to me. It's either them or the Patriots for the best offense. I would put them ahead of the Patriots right now, but that's only because Brady's only been back for, you know, three games or whatever he's been back for. But I rank them as the two best offenses by 10 miles in the NFL. You know, the Cowboys have been good, but I don't rank them up there. The Saints are coming on, but I still think it's Patriots and Falcons for the two best. But I'm certainly, from a picking perspective, staying away from that game. It screams out Falcons, but not for me. The other two games, I know we wanted to get to this coming week, but quickly from last week, I just want to note that the Raiders beat the Broncos in the biggest game they've played in a long time. And the Raiders,
yes.
I'm sorry, the Raiders, I meant to say, were undefeated on the road and terrible at home, but now they've got a huge win, and Simeon is not kind of the answer, it seems. Again, the Broncos' defense is really good, but Tlaib did not play. That's a huge loss for the Broncos' defense going back to his Patriots Super Bowl year. He's really a key to their defense, so they weren't really the Broncos. So I don't eliminate them as a top team, but the Raiders protected home field, which, again, they were having trouble earlier in the year. Both their losses are at home. And then finally, Monday night, the whole Seahawks. I mean, Richard Sherman is a jerk, but he's a great player. But if they didn't blow the whistle, I don't know that they did or didn't. He does have to play to block the field goal, but there's no doubt there was a 15-yard penalty. Blandino sent out a tweet during the game that we screwed up. It should have been roughing the kicker. That would have changed that game, in my opinion. You certainly would have had an easy field goal at that point. But give the Seahawks credit. I'm going to wind up picking the Patriots this week in their game, even though that one cries out to pick the Seahawks at 7.5. But the Seahawks are getting a little healthier. Russell Williams looked a little more mobile. I just heard a report he's going to wear a lighter knee brace and not going to tape his ankle this week. Maybe this is the week he breaks out and runs. But he hasn't run. You know, he's got similar rushing stats to Tom Brady this year. So we'll have to see. And also a big question, is Cam Chancellor coming back for the Seahawks? He might. We don't know just yet. And Deion Lewis might be activated off the PUP list. He was great last year when he played for the Patriots. But we don't know if he's going to be off the PUP list. You won't know till 4 o'clock Saturday. But he's just another weapon. I don't think the Seahawks defense can stop Tom Brady because I don't think anybody can stop the Patriots now. And they seem pretty healthy. And the only unhealthy thing, if Lewis comes back, then they're 100% healthy, and that's scary from an offensive point of view.
Yes, Deion Lewis, former Eagles property, didn't make good here, but anything that Bill Belichick gets his hands on seems to succeed. He does certainly yeoman's-like work up there. Marquee game of the week coming up, Steve. I think the most interesting game, well, there's certainly some interesting games, but, I mean, Dallas 7-1, they take their record to Pittsburgh. Your thoughts on that, the health of Ben Roethlisberger? I mean, he's making a pretty rapid return from the meniscus tear, and it's not a major injury or surgery, but certainly if he does play, I'm not sure how that knee will be. And I think it's a good test for the Cowboys. I don't think they're great, even though the record says they're pretty damn good. What are your thoughts on the game 4:25 kickoff this weekend?
Well, Ben Roethlisberger didn't look so good. I guess he got a little better as the game went on. I guess he was healthy enough to come back quickly. But I think the Cowboys have now kind of committed. You know, the question is now, will Tony Romo be the backup? And they said they won't know. I guess the backup quarterback for the Cowboys takes the last set of reps on Friday's practice with the number one team. So you won't know till tomorrow if Romo's going to be the backup. I think even Jerry Jones.
Let me ask you something right there, Steve, because I believe they know who's going to be the starter. Do you believe they already know, or are they, or is this just a smokescreen, or they really, what do they need to see?
Believe, of course, Jerry Jones is a wild card, so it's hard to say for sure, but I believe that they have to stick with Prescott, and they're going to stick with Prescott. You have to think that Romo is chirping. He says that he's ready to play in a game. He hasn't been hit, of course, all year. He's back from that back surgery. I think they might put him into uniform if they think he's ready to play. Not to start, but to sit right behind Prescott just in case Prescott gets hurt. If Romo can play, if he has the physical ability to play, you want him in uniform, but I still don't see, even with Jerry Jones, who, again, has backed off a little talking about the Cowboys' chemistry, I don't think he's going to start. I don't think it's an issue, but, you know, you have to say with the caveat, Jerry Jones is, you know, the coach of that team, essentially. But I'd be shocked, and I think most people would be shocked, if Prescott is not the starter this week. They're on a roll. They have great chemistry. And this is a good test for Prescott and the Cowboys, again, if Roethlisberger is healthy.
No, totally agree. Vikings in the nation's capital this week. Skins 4-3-1. Vikings have lost three straight. Can they rebound? Can they rebound on the road? I mean, maybe they weren't as good as their record said they were at 5-0, but I don't think they're as bad as they played in the last 3 weeks. What has been the problem with the Vikings besides protection for Sam Bradford? I mean, their defense still pretty steady. Can they pull one off on the road and get that ship righted, if you will?
Yeah, I don't think so. Washington is one of my three picks this week because the Vikings, yes, their offensive line is in flux, but I think now you're starting to see the loss of AP is coming out, so they don't have the play-action game that they had. I know he was only there for a game and a little, but the threat of it, they don't even have anymore. I think that's the problem offensively. And defensively, yes, they've been good, but I can't say, at least in my view, they have not been dominant, and that's what they were earlier in the year. I think it's a good test for Washington. I might be a little partial because, as you know, I picked them to win the division, which doesn't look so good now. But they have come back from 0-2, two home losses. So they're really 4-1-1 their last six. So, yeah, I've about given up on the Vikings. That's turned into a horrible division. I thought the Vikings and Packers would battle for it and both of them would make the playoffs. And now, frankly, as you know, I mean, it's just not like that. The Vikings are in the lead 5-3. Detroit's made a great comeback. You liked them last week. They won outright, and they're 5-4. The Packers are 4-4, and the Bears, even though they're 2-6, are, you know, they got Cutler back, so they're dangerous. But that's turned into a poor division, and I'm shocked by that.
Monday night, November 14th, the Bengals, who have been up and down all year, and they've, you know, made the playoffs for like the last 7 years, they're 0-7 or 0-6 on their Marvin Lewis looking to keep that streak alive. This is a telling game for their season. They're 3-4-1. Giants are 5-3 also. Still in the hunt for a division title, even though they haven't played great and maybe not a great team. What do you see Monday night? Andy Dalton, 9 touchdowns this year, a little under 2,500 yards. He's been okay. A.J. Green, just 3 touchdowns this year. Like you said earlier in the show, Victor Cruz is no longer, but they still have Beckham. Thoughts on the game at MetLife Monday night?
Yeah, to me, it's a pick'em game. I understand the Giants at home, 2.5-point favorites. I would stay away from that game myself. But again, here's another division that I thought used to have three of the best teams in football for years, Bengals, the Steelers, and the Ravens. And then you look at those standings, and the Ravens and Steelers are tied for the lead at 4-4. The Bengals are 3-4-1. And, of course, that's with the Browns in your division at 0-9. So that is another bizarre, not so good. Now, Roethlisberger has been hurt. The Ravens have not been even coming back. Originally, I think they were 2-3-0 at the beginning as well. And the Bengals just haven't been good. So it's a bizarre game. The reason I'm not real high on the Giants is because, again, I don't think they played that well last week. They could have easily lost that game. I think it was more Doug Peterson running sideways three times on fourth and short. Listen, I'm not even trying to be funny. And again, against a rookie quarterback who wouldn't even throw the ball up in the air at halftime to maybe get a chance to kick a field goal. So that's a stay-away game because I don't see either team playing well. And again, Victor Cruz has not been Cruz. I thought their offense would be much better with Cruz and Beckham in it. But he has made some good catches. He made a great one this past Sunday. But to lose him kind of narrows your options, and I think Beckham will be doubled the whole game against the Bengals. So that's a stay-away game. I couldn't pick a winner except to say I hope the Giants win it.
I didn't think you were being funny, but it's funny to me because they are, and Troy Aikman actually called them the Keystone Cops. They're secondary, getting befuddled on one of the touchdown throws early in the game. The moves by Peterson, being aggressive is one thing. This is the questionable calls. Carson Wentz looking not even like a rookie, regressing to wherever he played in high school. He looked that bad, the whole team. This is what we usually deal with week in and week out. They always give you something to talk about. There was 4 days of Josh Huff talk because of his arrest for the hollow bullets. For a guy who did nothing here, I couldn't believe he tied up 4 days of the airwaves and how the Eagles handled that. I just never got it. It wasn't like it was a PO, but Josh Huff is on to Tampa Bay, and it's just that team is never at a loss for a storyline. That's why I was chuckling to myself because it's so bad sometimes. It is comical, the organization that it called themselves at one point the gold standard, comparing themselves to the New England Patriots. I don't think Jeffrey Lurie will ever live that down, but we shall move on. Your Jets, let's give them a little airtime. Playing the Rams at home, they're 3-6. They've had certainly their ups and downs and their quarterback issues and whatnot. What do you see out of the Jets the rest of the way?
Yeah, I don't see a whole lot. They're not – I'm a New York guy. They're not my Jets, though. But as you know, we talked early on. I said it would be a miracle if they were 3-3 their first six. Then they were 1-5.
Yeah.
They were still trying to sell that after a two-game winning streak. I picked the Dolphins last week, and frankly, they were fortunate to win. Whatever you think of Fitzpatrick, he drove them down the field late in the game to give them the lead. But I think they're going nowhere. There's some problems in the locker room. Richardson was, benched for the first quarter for missing a meeting. Marshall and Fitzpatrick, whatever happened. Marshall said he's going down with Fitz as his quarterback, and guess what? He's going down with Fitz as his quarterback.
Yeah.
So I don't see much for the Dolphins, and never forget when we talked about them the first 6 weeks, all of that 6 weeks was without playing the Patriots. They haven't played the Patriots. They're going to play them twice. To me, that's two more losses. I don't see how the Jets can beat it. Their season is over. I thought it was over after the first six games. So I don't see much for the Jets. The question in New York is, are they going to throw Petty into the mix to see what they have after five games? Because I'll be shocked if they sign Geno. He's hurt. I'll be shocked if they sign Fitz. He's, intercepted himself out of town. Now he's got 12. He leads the league in interceptions. So a lot of the Jet fans are clamoring for Petty just to see if he's any good. Should I give you my picks now? Because I know we don't have a lot of time.
Yes. Yes, sir. Please do.
2-1 last week. I was happy with that, frankly. Chargers and Dolphins up. Packers really let me down. I won't pick them the rest of the year. This week, Washington minus 2.5 over the Vikings in Washington. I'm going to stick with the Chargers. I think they're on an offensive roll, and they're playing at home, minus 3.5 over the Dolphins. And I'm going to stay with the Patriots till they don't cover, even though 7.5 screams out for the Seahawks. Again, I don't think this is the Seahawks of yesteryear. Their defense is, I'll say, good to really good. There's no way they're great or dominant. So I like Patriots minus 7.5, Chargers minus 3.5, Washington minus 2.5. How about you?
I was 1-2 last. The Lions were the only game that, kind of worked in my favor. The Eagles certainly had opportunities, but we know what that means in the NFL. And call me crazy, and maybe I am. I went with the Browns over the boys. That worked out for about 12 seconds. Cowboys won 35-10 this week. Staying away from Green Bay as well, although I looked at that game. I'm going Carolina at home. They've won a couple games in a row, even though KC's hot with Nicky Franchise, Nicky Foles at the helm with Andy Reid. I know this is – I'm going to kick myself for this, but that game, Philadelphia pick with Atlanta, yeah, that was a game normally I would have unloaded on Atlanta and picked myself because the Eagles ended up with 5 turnovers and won the game. I'm going with the Eagles, and I'm staying with the Pats, even though it's a high line, 7 in the hook. With Seattle, that should be an interesting game as the Patriots roll on. All right, we got about 7 minutes left, Stevie. World Series talk, we haven't chatted on the air since then. Certainly quite a way to end a 108-year drought in arguably one of the greatest game sevens of all time. I know we're very in the moment and everything is the greatest when it happens, but Blackjack, that game with Smoltz, to me, was, in my lifetime, the greatest game seven I've ever seen. 10 innings, he went, shut out the Braves, 1-0, Lonnie Smith, base running error, all that stuff, and the rest is history for the Twins and the Braves. But it was an unbelievable showcase of drama. Russ Chapman gives up 3 straight hits, including a home run to Rush Davis, and then the rain delay. And it was just ridiculous how everything unfolded. Your thoughts on how that recapped up? And, of course, if the Cubs don't win, my man Joe Madden takes a lot of heat, maybe for keeping Chapman in that blowout game the night before. But, he doesn't, and things work out. Mike Montgomery gets his first save of his life. And it was just crazy. It was just crazy how it ended. Maybe it was, the baseball gods kind of in a spectacular fashion putting an end to a 108-year drought.
Yeah, really amazing. Montgomery against Martinez for the longest drought World Series in the history of the world for the final out of the game. I mean, just, who would have thunk it type thing. But it was a great game.
Martinez, he got killed in this town. He was like a utility Rule 5 guy. Michael Martinez would always bounce around. And here he is in the biggest stage, the biggest game, ever. And it's up to him. And he does what I think we all thought Philly was going to do. He grounds out the third.
Yeah, imagine if Brian had fallen down a little, slipped a little earlier and thrown the ball in the right field. That would have made things interesting. Yeah. But I will say this. Look, I think I've thought Joe Madden is the best manager in baseball for a long time. I think he revolutionized the game with the shift more than any other manager. I think Francona was already a Hall of Famer for what he did in Boston, and I thought Madden might have been a Hall of Famer but needed a World Series. He got it. Having said all of that, this was a very poorly managed game, in my opinion, just from the pitching perspective, and it started the night before. I really thought they had a day off. Chapman threw all those pitches in Game 5, but then they had a day off. And then in Game 6, I just assumed winning 7-2 and then 9-2 that Madden went to Chapman and said, "Do you want to throw tonight?" But apparently that wasn't the case. Apparently Madden didn't want to take any chances. That's like a mini panic to bring in your closer up 7-2.
A little bit.
And then to bring him back out up 9-2. So I thought Madden did a poor job. And just looking at Game 7 alone, I would say this. Francona, who tried to steal the World Series with Kluber in games 1, 4, and 7. And we talked about this. I thought he should not have started Kluber in game 4 because they were up 2-1. I thought maybe they should have started that guy Merritt, who maybe he died because he's left-handed, but who had done a really good job in the prior rounds. You know, I think he threw 4 2/3 a shutout ball or something like that. So I think the pitching was very poorly. I would summarize that game this way from a pitching perspective, that Francona stayed at least a batter too long with Kluber. He brought him out for the inning where he gave up the home run, and then he took him out. That was a big run, obviously. And I know that
sure.
Joe Maddon went too early with Hendricks. Hendricks struck out the last guy he faced. Just a horrific call by the home plate umpire. If you looked at the box, it wasn't even on the line. It was like 3 inches into the strike zone, and he didn't make that call.
Yep.
So to take a guy like Hendricks out, I think it was 65 pitches. To me, that was a panic move, and obviously didn't work out when Lester came in and you had the freak, frankly,
wild
freak,
pitch.
two-run wild pitch, which you rarely, if ever, see, give Kipnis credit.
Yep.
But I thought it was not well managed, and by the last game, I think all these guys were out of gas. Miller was clearly out of gas. Kluber was clearly out of gas, and Chapman was clearly out of gas. So while I think they're both Hall of Famers, I think they did a poor job in the biggest game, certainly of Maddon's life and maybe of Francona's life, although he's got two in his pocket, so it wasn't as bad, I guess.
Sure, sure. We have about a little over 2 minutes left. When you say they ran out of gas, you look. I mean, the losing team of the first six games scored 3 runs or less, and then both teams explode in the last game, 8-7. Yes, did they run out of gas? Yes. Do you think nerves had anything to do with it? I always say that, you know, these batters get paid too, and we've seen the greatest reliever of all time, Mariano Rivera, blow a save in a Game 7 in a World Series game back in 2000 against the Diamondbacks, Luis Gonzalez et al. Is it all about the pitching, or do we give any credit to these hitters for making plays when they needed to?
Yeah, I give some credit, but even the Rivera was, he threw away the bunt, and then Gonzalez got 120-foot single, a blue single to win it all.
Yeah.
But I don't agree. You got to give the hitters some credit, of course, but I don't agree with the notion, oh, they've seen these guys. Joe Buck said, oh, they've seen these guys so many times, and once you see them, I don't think it was that. I really don't. I think if you are a nasty pitcher like Miller, you can see him a lot, and you're not hitting him if he's healthy and well-rested. Chapman, there's got to be a difference, and I think there was, between throwing 98 and 99 and throwing 102. There's a little difference. I guess Rajay Davis's sweet spot is down and in, and they talked about how you didn't want to throw it down and into him after he hit the home run. Please tell me that before, and I'll believe you more. But I think it was more the pitches were out of gas. I don't know that it was nerves. You'll never know. It is Game 7 of the World Series because you certainly can't duplicate that. But I really think they went to the well too much with Kluber. Don't forget, against Toronto, they were up 3-0, and they still pitched Kluber on short rest, which I thought was ridiculous, and he lost that game 5-1. So he went 3 times on short rest, so I think he was out of gas. And I don't think it was because they got used to that Greg Maddux pitch, because he really didn't get it over the plate that much in Game 7. And the strikeouts, you'll recall, 8 in the first 3 innings in Game 1, 3 in the first 3 innings of Game 4, 0 in Game 7.
All right, Stevie, great stuff. We got to go. We'll see you next time on Callous Remarks. Joe Stasek and Steve Callous. Thanks for listening, everybody. So long.
Small businesses. Direct Line guaranteed to be any public liability insurance quote for the same cover. Can your insurance do that? New customers only. Qualifying criteria apply. Underwritten by UK Insurance Limited.